Aisha and Debbie dish about the issues that affect our lives and families.
Welcome to Aisha and Debbie Dish. I'm Debbie Monterey of KMOX Radio.
And I'm Aisha Salton with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
All right, so we took a week off because I went from, we talked about horrible allergies, and I thought I had horrible allergies, but I was really sick last week. So we took our first week off of Aisha and Debbie Dish. And so we neglected to talk about our birthday challenges. So we had both been inspired by Carol Daniels' idea to make her big birthday something really special. And she did a great job. You can check a couple podcasts back at kmox.com/Debbie if you want to catch up on that. But Aisha today is going to talk about her birthday challenge because she celebrated her birthday just a couple of weeks ago.
I did. And so I didn't want to do anything too complicated. And I wanted it to be something very personal. So I just put on my birthday as my Facebook status update that there is a family, a local family who's been here almost a year, who are refugees from the war in Syria, the conflict in Syria. And they're a young couple, and they had a very middle-class life there. And they came here with two young children, and the mom is about to have a baby. And they really have nothing to prepare for this baby. So I said, I would like to have a virtual baby shower for her. And if anybody wants to throw in a few dollars, I would take her to get the essentials, diapers and some baby stuff, and, you know, maybe see if we could find a good crib, car seat, you know, just those basics. They really add up.
Absolutely. Think about how expensive just the diapers alone are.
I know. And then, you know, the car seat and a bassinet or something for the baby to sleep in. So anyway, all I did was I made this my Facebook status update, and honestly, I got like 70 people who said they wanted to donate. So thank you to my very, very generous friends. And we've raised over $1,000.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that great? So now I'm going to go, and a few people volunteered to donate things that are really pretty brand new, you know, because I'm nervous about taking used car seats or used cribs because the recalls and things are always changing. So I'm going to pick up things that are fairly new, and then I'm going to take the family to go get stuff for the baby who is coming in August.
Oh, that is really exciting. All right, so that is Aisha's birthday challenge, and I'm going to unveil mine next week because we're both May babies, and my birthday is Memorial Day weekend, which means that no one ever remembers it because everybody's always at their picnics and barbecues. So I'm going to make it about some other group or organization, and you can find out next week how you can help me help them.
Excellent.
All right. So congratulations on Aisha's. And if people want to donate, should they just go to your Facebook
page? Yeah,
just
go to my Facebook page, Aisha Salton. You can find me, and it's all public and it's on there.
All right. Yeah. Well, one of the things that Aisha and I have been talking about amongst ourselves and other moms has been this phenomena of the show that is on Netflix. And if you have teenagers in the house, you probably already know about this show.
Right.
And lots of schools know about this show, too. If you don't have kids in your life, you're like, what are you talking about? But it's 13 Reasons Why. And Aisha, you wrote a column about this, which I was eagerly anticipating because I said, oh, you're going to write about what we should do about this show. So as soon as it went to press, I'm like, here it is. So the reason this is an important show or an important thing to discuss is because it's about this girl who commits suicide, and she sends these tapes to 13 different people basically explaining why she killed herself.
And in each one of the tapes, she blames or implicates that person. That tape is dedicated to a person as part of the reasons why she committed suicide. And so I wanted to bring on a special guest, Dr. Eric Spiegel, who is the Washington University Clinical Director of Child and Adolescent Division of Psychiatry, child psychiatrist with St. Louis Children's Hospital. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, in some ways, people have said, Dr. Spiegel, that this is a good show because it can spark conversations about suicide. And I think the latest statistics I've seen is that suicide among young people especially has just risen exponentially, and it's a health crisis, something obviously we need to talk about.
It is one of the leading causes of death for young children.
Right, but on the other hand, people are like, this show glorifies it, and it makes it like a revenge fantasy against everyone who's wronged you. Where do you fall on this?
So I think that both things are very true. I think that if parents are able to talk to their children about these issues that they wouldn't otherwise talk to their children about, then that's a good thing. Because not having open lines of communication about taboo topics, and suicide is a very taboo topic in our society, that's a good thing. At the same time, you mentioned glorifying suicide, and then also using suicide as a means to an end, using it as revenge. These are two of, and there's some other things I can mention, things that do enhance what's called suicide contagion, which is a real thing. And so we obviously don't want media to be making it more likely that children commit suicide.
Can you just explain what suicide contagion is?
Suicide contagion is usually referring to a time where in a specific area, either one person in the community commits suicide or a famous person, someone of stature in the community, and then it gets either coverage within a community circle or media coverage, and then there's a rash of suicides kind of as a result.
So one thing I wrote about my column is, and I forced myself to watch all 13 episodes of this show, even though I really didn't want to.
I could not bring myself to watch any of it yet.
Well, I watched it. And if you just want to watch the last two episodes, I think those are the most problematic and graphic ones. So at least you have an idea of like what the most troubling content on there is. Just watch the last two. But when you talk about suicide contagion, I wrote in my column that in my junior year of high school, three students in my school committed suicide. And how difficult and painful and just traumatic that was. So, that was a real concern and worry of mine watching this, is that if there are kids who are on the bubble, who are vulnerable, then I don't want this show to make suicide seem like a good idea.
Well, right. And also because of the revenge fantasy part, where I think when we were all young, I think it goes through every adolescent's mind at some point. You're angry, maybe at your parents or a ex-boyfriend or a friend or something, and you think, oh, if I was dead, then they'd all regret it then.
Right.
And you don't want that to seem like a viable option to kind of stick it to somebody.
Right. So I think that that's a great point, Debbie, is the idea of it being a fantasy. Mm-hmm. And so if we can talk with our children about it being a fantasy and couch it that way, as opposed to it being a depiction of reality. And
okay.
I think we all kind of know our children well enough to know if they can tell the difference. The younger they are, the less likely they are to tell the difference between those two things, and they're going to need their parents to do so. As we well know, children are watching Netflix on phones, on tablets, in the basement. Most children have watched this show all the way through before their parents even have heard of it.
Absolutely. Every parent I interviewed said, I found out my kid's already seen it, and I don't want to watch it, and I haven't seen any of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, my daughter had started watching it, and she asked me, have you heard of the show? And I said, well, of course I'd heard of it. Are you watching it? And she said, yes. And then I got concerned because I hadn't gotten around to seeing any of the episodes myself. But then Aisha and I started talking about it and how she was writing a column. So I asked my daughter again, are you still watching it? Did you finish it? And she said, well, I think some of the content might be inappropriate for me. And I thought it might be the actual, because I understand there's a graphic suicide scene. But she watches a lot of horror movies, so I didn't really think that that would, you know, impact her that much. She said, well, like rape and stuff. And I'm like, oh, dear God, she's 12 and she's watching
rape
and suicide.
Right.
Oh, do I really have to watch this show, Dr. Spiegel? Do I have to watch it?
I don't think so. I think if your children have watched it and you read up on it and you listen to their thoughts on it,
mm-hmm.
You probably are okay. You don't have to devote 13 hours to be a good parent. Although I think that being able to talk to your 12-year-old about rape, to your 10-year-old about suicide, are important things to be able to do as a parent. So as far as the good goes, we really do want to talk to children as young as they can, ask questions about it. Because the younger we talk to them about these important topics, the more time they have to develop and understand your way of thinking about it and ways to sort of cope with it over time, so it isn't sprung on them by, you don't want 13 Reasons Why to be the first time your child hears about suicide, right? Because then it will be the way that they understand suicide to be.
Interesting. What do you tell a tween, a 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old about suicide? How do you have that conversation?
Well, what I tell my patients and parents is that thinking about suicide is actually a relatively common thing. Mm-hmm. About 15% of high school students have had serious thoughts of taking their own life in the past year, just regular old high school students. So they're not alone if they think that way. But then following that up with, this is something you can get treatment for. This is something we can help with. Mm-hmm. It is not something that is, as we mentioned, a means to an end or the end of a story. And I think that depictions in the media that are lacking in stories is people that have suicidal thinking, get help, and then go on to lead productive lives, which is actually what most people experience.
That was, I think, the biggest takeaway from what I wrote about it, too, is that depression and anxiety and mental illness is treatable, and whether it's through counseling or medication or a combination of both. And millions of people have suffered trauma that they're able to still survive and lead normal, healthy, happier lives. So that message was not present in this series at all, and it is so important.
So we talked about how kids are watching all of this. They're consuming so much media. It used to be they were parked in the living room so you could tell what they were watching. Mm-hmm. And even the most, you know, Aisha and I talk all the time about how we try to be
vigilant,
but, you know, they'll sneak an iPhone and you don't know what they're watching. Oh, they're supposed to be doing their homework and they're doing this or that. Any tips on how to, you know, how damaging is it that we have moved from kids watching TV in the living room to God only knows what they're doing in their rooms on their phones?
Well, I think that one of the problems is technology has moved so fast, faster than we grown-ups can keep up with it. Mm-hmm. And it's just fine for kids because they have grown up with it. So mm-hmm. I think it's on us as parents to be more tech savvy than we might necessarily be comfortable with in order to understand certain things. Like, for example, this show is TVMA, which is the TV ratings equivalent of rated R. Mm-hmm. Whenever I was 10, I wasn't watching any rated R movies.
Yeah,
and
right.
That was something that, you know, was fairly easy for my mom to regulate, right?
I wasn't even allowed to watch PG-13 movies when I was 10. Like,
late
I had to be 13. You'd
have that pay-per-view channel, and you'd try and watch between the bars, and you knew, you know what I'm talking about? You knew something bad was going on, but you couldn't quite see it.
It was much, but you were after it, right? So, and that's, but kids these days with Netflix on their phone in their room, it's not even a challenge. They can watch whatever they want if you're not on top of it. And so on the one hand, you have to be more tech savvy, you have to be more vigilant. On the other hand, I think there's a certain amount of acceptance that our children are exposed to things that we weren't exposed to at that age. And then just willing to talk through the issues that come up. If the words suicide and rape make you cringe when your children say them the first time, then maybe it's time to have another conversation and another conversation till it becomes something you can talk with them in a way that you can help them understand the way that you deal with these kind of tragic things in the world.
Do you agree with a lot of the schools that are sending out these, you know, notices? I know our principal did, and I think your superintendent probably did, just saying, don't let your kids watch it. Should we tell our kids, do not watch this? Because in some ways that makes it even
makes them want to watch
attractive.
It more.
Right. I have never found it to be effective to forbid children from doing much of anything unless it's super dangerous. I think that if anything, that probably increases the ratings for Netflix. I think that a more helpful message is the one I'm trying to spread here, which is hear about it. If you've heard about it, if you're a parent, figure out what's on there. What are the themes? There's lots of things on there that actually parents could learn from. How does cyberbullying happen? What is revenge porn? Right. How does that affect kids? How could you deal with these certain things? And you're probably going to have to deal with these things when you go to middle school, when you go to high school. How would you deal with them? Who would you turn to for help? These are the messages that we want to kind of rehearse with our kids so that when they run into this kind of a thing, it isn't the literal end of the world for them, and that there's many, many ways to deal with it, not just one way out.
I think that's such a good point that for some parents who have not been in high school for a while, they don't realize how much social pressure and the ways in which social pressure has changed. So, and the reason why this show was so popular with tweens and teens is because it resonated. And there was parts of it that felt so real and authentic to them. And so there is value in seeing that if you're not familiar with what it's like to be a teenager or a tween right now.
It's well made. The acting is good. The writing is good. It's a well-made show.
It's
and a lot of the stuff
so
other than
graphic
the suicide.
Yeah. And the rape scenes where it felt gratuitous and went on and on. And it was just like, And well, where I think it's most dangerous, because, you know, the vast majority of kids who have watched us are not going to have any problems, but it's those kids who already self-harm or already have depression or anxiety that I feel like it could trigger really like a bad spiral. And mm-hmm. that's what I kind of worry about.
Yeah. And I think that that's brings us back to the sort of suicide contagion thing. There's really overly simplistic reasons for why someone committed suicide. It's just not the way that it works. Mm-hmm. And the media sometimes does present suicide as this person committed suicide for this simple reason or that simple reason. Really, what happens is, as you mentioned, Aisha, is a trigger. I've been depressed. I've had lots of problems at home or school, a mental illness, and then something bad happens, and that leads me to commit suicide. I maybe have been thinking about it for a while or attempt. That's kind of a trigger. But these children are usually quite ill or having lots of struggles where we can intervene before that time. And there's a big difference between this is just a reason that people commit suicide or it was a big stressor or a trigger at the time.
So there was a story right now published, I think yesterday, in the Chicago Tribune about a very popular hockey student in high school. And the parents say that he had absolutely no previous mental health issues at all. I mean, popular, well-liked, well-adjusted. And he had taped a sexual encounter with a girlfriend or a peer that he had shown some friends. And apparently it was mostly audio. It wasn't that much video. But this got reported to the principal. And then the school called him in. And the school resource officer, the police officer in the school, said that, well, this might need to be investigated as child porn. And this child, after that conversation, left the school, jumped off a parking lot building, and died. And the story is so gripping and heartbreaking. And the parents were just like
devastated
and stunned, because here's their kid who's never been in trouble, who's like doing well by all measures. And in this impulsive, rash moment of devastation, just made this terrible choice. I mean, does that kind of thing happen too? I mean, I know that's not common, but it really, I think, impacts parents when you read stories like that, because you're just like, whoa, there were no signs.
And I would know. I would, you know, you'd like to think as a parent, you would know.
So most parents don't know about, and we can't really, and this is one of the problems with reporting about suicide, wherever you heard this, is like, we don't have the full story.
Right.
What was the mental health history of this child? How was he doing leading up to this? Was he totally fine until this happened, or were there lots of kind of stressors in his life? Mm-hmm. And there's a trope that happens in the media of like, he was so great on the hockey team, or he was so smart, or he's so popular, emphasizing the positive characteristics of somebody who commits suicide really does actually add to suicide contagion, because it makes suicide seem
glamorous,
like a good thing to do, or something that would and the memorial in 13 Reasons Why is another thing. They put a bunch of stuff on her locker, Hannah, the character that commits suicide, and take selfies with it and things like that. Actually, memorializing somebody in the community for committing suicide, although seemingly that's a nice thing to do, it's not a good idea, and it's not recommended for that reason. Really, what it looks like is you're honoring the act, and you don't want to do that.
They'll love me afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
All right, well, we have Dr. Spiegel here in studio, so of course now we're going to ask him all of our questions, because Aisha and I always need an expert, like, just follow us around and answer our daily questions. But we had another horrible tragedy this week in real life, and for those of us who have young kids, they all love Ariana Grande.
Yes.
And I bet a lot of parents listening right now probably haven't had conversations with their kids about terrorism or some of these horrible things that people might do for whatever reason. So I was driving home the other day from a T-ball game when I saw the news on my phone, and then it came on the radio about the bombing outside the concert in Manchester. And of course, I've got a 12-year-old and a 7-year-old. They both love Ariana Grande, so they're full of questions. And I just tried to do the answer only the questions they ask you and basic information, because I didn't really know what to say.
Right. And with something like that, it's so relatable, because
it's Ariana Grande.
It's you know, a pop figure that they've either, you know, liked or listened to, and a concert. We've taken our kids. Our kids have gone to concerts. So what should we say to our kids about this?
I think, again, you have to assess where your kid is developmentally. What questions are they asking? I think the questions that they're asking is a great starting place. Mm-hmm. And being as honest as you can about the way that you think about these things in the world. And if you haven't really thought about terrorism and how you go through the, I mean, a lot of us deal with things as bad as terrorist acts as is just denying them, to not thinking about them. That could never happen to me. If your child wants to talk to you about it, that's a good thing. And so you kind of have to go a little deeper than that to talk about how you think about it. These are people that are making an extremely bad choice to hurt other people. They don't care about other people's lives. They've decided that these other things are more important than innocent people's lives. And it's an awful and terrible thing that happens sometimes. Almost, I think I might relate it in a way to natural disasters, you know,
right.
And that might be something that where they can sit with it. The problem is that a lot of our kids who are really young, natural disasters is the most terrifying thing
it is
to
so,
them.
That was what terrified my son when he was younger. It was the scariest thing, where tornadoes and natural disasters, mm-hmm. absolutely terrifying.
My son is the basement. Don't make him go into the basement.
And we may not want to put all, I mean, whenever we hear about this, it makes us think about a lot of different things about what kind of person would do this,
right.
and what are the reasons behind it, and what kind of a world do we live in.
Right.
Our children may not be thinking about it that way. It's a scary thing that happened, and these are the facts of the situation, and you can talk about how uncommon things like this are in the mm-hmm. world in general, to try to make them feel safe in their home, that sort of a thing. And if that's all they want to know, you don't have to go a lot deeper and scarier than kind of where they are. Now older teens, they may want to have a political argument with you about it.
Right.
And that's good too, but you kind of have to follow their lead.
I think sometimes I have to disguise or set aside my own emotions in order to talk to my kids more calmly and rationally about something, because I will be so scared and upset and angry and, you know, just anxious that I know it's uncommon, but we read about these things and they're so horrific, and you'd think that it could happen to anyone at any moment. I mean, I know that's not really factually the case, but it kind of is.
Right. I mean, the odds of being killed by a terrorist are the odds of being killed in a car accident on the way to the concert are exponentially higher.
Right.
But one last question for you, because we're actually running out of time. So I've had somebody tell me, you know, just assure your children that they are safe and that you will protect them and that that won't happen. And so I do that, but then somehow it feels dishonest because I can't promise them that nothing's going to happen. And then if something bad happens, then they're like, Mom, you said this would never happen.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, and you don't want to lie to your children, right? And I don't think you want to lie about the way you're feeling. I don't think you want to lie about the way things are in the world. But the facts are is that they are most likely quite safe, and that the most likely this is not going to happen to them. Bad things do happen, and you're going to be there for them when they do.
Mm.
And we can't predict all the bad things that might happen. And if we do worry about a car accident happening to the loved ones that are driving around, we can't go about our lives. So,
well, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your expert advice.
Yes, thank you. This was so useful and helpful, and hopefully helpful to people who are watching and listening.
Right. And
can I throw in the Suicide Prevention Lifeline
real fast?
SuicidePreventionLifeline.org is a website where you can either chat online to a suicide counselor, or there's a phone number, 1-800-273-8255. That's talk. You can talk to somebody, or as we know, our adolescents would prefer to text. So they can
do that now,
definitely.
That's perfect.
All right. And Aisha may need a separate session after having to watch.
I know.
All
episodes, I will call you about that.
It's
right.
a trauma. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, Dr. Spiegel is the Washington University Clinic Director of Child and Adolescent Division of Psychiatry at St. Louis Children's Hospital. That is a very long and impressive title. So thank you for your expertise
today.
Thank
you.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
And that wraps up Aisha and Debbie Dish for this week. I'm Debbie Monterey.
And I'm Aisha Sultan with the Post-Dispatch.
This has been the Aisha and Debbie Dish podcast. Thanks for listening, and join them for the next Aisha and Debbie Dish podcast.